Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around. He said, "This is where you get off, boy, cause I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks." He said, "You don't have to call me Mister, Mister. The whole world called me Hank." He said, "Drifter, can you make..."
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me, and we will respond to whatever it is that you are inquiring about. Still come about an hour from now, the co-publisher of Land Yap, a publication I write for, almost 20 years now, Rob Holbert will be with us. We'll talk about the so-called ethics reform effort underway in the House, whatever you think of that, and get his take on that and kind of the reaction throughout to it, but by members of the Ethics Commission and by the media. Also on the program, Chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, John Wall. So make sure you stick around for that. But joining us now, he's our state auditor. Always a pleasure to bring on my friend, Andrew Sorrell. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing well. It's really cloudy here in Montgomery. It looks like we've got another eclipse or something today. It's about what it looked like yesterday if I was trying to view the eclipse. But other than that, it's a nice morning.
Yeah, that's kind of get the same vibe here with the overcast, but I guess it's spread throughout the state. Well, let's kick it off here. And reason I asked you on, it looks like you got a bill, Andrew Jones, in the Senate that's going to kind of expand the role of the state auditor, at least to when there is missing state property, because that's like what the auditor audits. It's state property. That you could kind of try to recoup it or get some kind of compensation for it.
Yeah, so let's actually rewind the clock 2 years. Senator Jones actually had introduced a bill that would have eliminated the state auditor's office back in the 2022 session. This was my last year in the legislature before I ran for state auditor. I guess I was in the middle of running for state auditor. The bill did not make it through, but throughout that process, Senator Jones and I actually became really good friends. And his message was, look, if we're going to have a state auditor's office, then, you know, can we give it some more responsibilities? And if we're not going to, should we consider eliminating it? And I said, well, I like your first suggestion better. I said, let's fix the position. The position was watered down back in the 1940s. A lot of the duties that it used to have were stripped away from it. And I said, we need to rebuild the position and make it something that's more useful to the taxpayers. Now, that being said, I still think we perform a really valuable function. We track $1.3 billion worth of taxpayer property, and we do it on a budget of just over $1 million a year. So it's still a really efficient use of taxpayer property. And even if you were to eliminate the auditor, you'd have to transfer the duty somewhere else, and it wouldn't really be any savings to the state. It would require the same number of staff to oversee the property audits in the state. So throughout that process, like I said, Senator Jones and I became friends. We began looking at things we could do to improve the auditor's office. And what we came up with here is a bill, Senate Bill 274, which he introduced a week ago, be in committee tomorrow afternoon, by the way, Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development in the State Senate. And the bill expands on the role of the auditors with regards to property. So property is our constitutional duty. It does not expand the auditor's duties beyond the role of property audits. There was some talk about that in previous versions of the bill. We decided not to go that route. But it creates more accountability for state property, mandates the reporting of lost or stolen property, authorizes my office to conduct investigations into missing state property, and it also authorizes me and the Attorney General to send demand letters or the Attorney General to even bring civil actions for cases of negligent loss or damage to state property. So that's we can dive deeper into those details, but in a quick overview, that's what the bill is seeking to accomplish.
Well, and if it adds to the responsibilities of your office, I mean, because this looks to me like there's just more work and built into it. What do you do? Are you going to need a bigger budget? Are you going to need to expand the office? Like walk us through how that would change your day to day.
So, Jeff, you know, I'm a small government conservative. I voted against a lot of spending bills when I was in the legislature. I don't like to see the size and scope of government growing Here, we are not increasing the size of government at all. I do not need any additional staff, and I don't need any additional funding to accomplish what this bill would task my office with doing. Increasing the scope of my duties? No, I wouldn't say it increases the scope. I would say that it gives us more authority over the scope we already have, which is property. It, again, does not grow government in any way. The examiners of public accounts have reviewed the bill and signed off on it, for lack of a better term, not expecting any opposition there. The Attorney General staff has reviewed it because he's mentioned in the bill, and they're comfortable with it as well. So, you know, as of now, I'm not aware of anybody that's opposing this bill. But one of the problems we're having in the auditor's office is inflation, right? Just like everyone in Alabama is probably fighting inflation in some way, and it's hitting our office in two ways. Number one, I'm trying to keep my budget small, and inflation is making our software more expensive, gasoline more expensive for my auditors. Health insurance is going up. SEIB sends, you know, the new insurance rates to my office that we're responsible for funding these increases. And I don't have any say in the matter. So that's one way inflation is affecting us. But the other way is in property audits, because we audit anything that costs, the initial cost is $500 or more for the state. Well, as you can imagine, almost everything you buy costs $500 now. So everything is going on the property rolls, whereas 30 years ago, a $500 item would have been a much more substantial purchase than it is today. So the first thing I'm asking for in the bill is if we can index that audit property threshold value number to inflation. So it's at 500 today. Every 2 years, it would allow me to adjust it based on CPI inflation data, with 90 days notice to all the various property managers of the different state boards and agencies. I could raise that value. So theoretically, if we had, you know, 2 years of, let's say, combined inflation of 5% over 2 years, then the new audit threshold will be $525.
Well, so you've already got a game planned out and how to deal with that. We're joined by State Auditor Andrew Sorrell here on the program. You know, so that you can talk about this, like when you first took over the auditor's office, I mean, it did appear like it was something that was potentially on the ropes. All throughout Jim Ziegler's tenure there, there was always some kind of effort to do away with it and fold it into some other government agency. But it looks like the momentum has shifted the other direction now, that it is now something that you at least, if anything, from what I can tell, that movement has died down, and now you've reversed the trend and maybe got that trend going the opposite direction.
I appreciate you noticing and saying that. And I was stopped at lunch a couple of weeks ago. I was in a restaurant. One of the lobbyists in Montgomery called me and said, I just want you to know, he said, everyone in Montgomery is talking about what a great job the state auditor's office is doing and how well the office is running. And I thought, wow, that's really cool to know. I mean, I feel like we're doing a great job. We're all caught up on our audits. I came in, I asked the governor if we could move the auditor staff back into the Capitol. We did that. We're saving taxpayers $30,000 a year by not paying rent. You know, I didn't take a state vehicle. I've done everything I can to make sure the auditor's office is running efficiently. But now the task before us is, what can I do better within my role as watching over state government property? What can we do better? Well, one of the problems that we're having is when state property goes missing, it doesn't always get reported to us. So most of the agencies are voluntarily reporting this stuff within 30 days. This bill would require that they report it to us within 30 days of them becoming aware that the item is missing. So we don't want to show up in an audit and say, hey, what happened to the computer? Oh, I don't know. We lost that 18 months ago. Well, we need to know about that now so we can potentially do something about it, right? So it's going to require reporting. And then, Jeff, I'm going to tell you a quick story. So this just happened 2 or 3 weeks ago. There was a fellow who was tasked with delivering property to Surplus Property Division, which is a division of ADECA, and they auction this stuff off online. You know, when the agency no longer has a use for it, that's what happens. It goes on govdeals.com, and it's put there by the Surplus Property Division. So this person pulls up surplus property to drop this property off, and there's a line, and he doesn't feel like waiting. So what does he do? He takes it upon himself to hop in the back of the truck and literally throw the stuff out of the truck rather than unloading it on a loading dock. He throws it off the truck onto the concrete and breaks it. And it's $20,000 worth of equipment that was ruined because this person didn't feel like waiting for help to unload it. So to me, that is a negligent loss of state property. That person should be held accountable. You know, after some more investigation, if this bill had passed, after an investigation by my office, we would issue a demand letter and ask that person to repay the state agency for the value of the property that he destroyed. And that's not happening right now. And my office is not the office that makes the determination on whether or not the property loss is negligent. That's done by the agency. And if they mark that the loss was non-negligent, that's the end of it. The taxpayers are on the hook for whatever property was lost. I'm not sure I've seen something marked negligent since I've been here. Now, this most recent case I just told you about just happened, so that hasn't, the determination there hasn't even been made. But one of the things this bill would allow is for my office to review. This is where the Division of Investigations in the bill comes in, right? It allowed my office to review the facts surrounding the loss or damage of state property and determine for ourselves whether or not we think it was negligent. And if we do, we could issue a demand letter for repayment. If we do not receive repayment, or if the agency doesn't receive it, I should say, we can refer it to the Attorney General for civil action.
Are you getting any pushback? I mean, I can't imagine that you are at this, maybe at the stage, or maybe this is something that kind of goes, but some of these agencies may not like this new standard, this new, especially, you know, when it comes to government employees, and they tend to protect their own within the bureaucracy, I find. But are you getting any reaction from within the government?
No, I've not heard any negative reaction out of any of the agencies. Now, it is possible that you're right and that some of them will be opposed, because it does create a new layer of accountability. One of the other things that it does is it requires that upon request, they turn over their internal policies and procedures for managing state property to us. Now, I've said this in an interview with 1819 News, and I'll say it here today. We're not out to hassle these state agencies. We're trying to help them. Our goal is for every state agency to lose zero items, right? And by the way, we lose very little. We lose 0.16% of state property was what we lost in the last quarter. But we're not there to harass the state agencies. The ones that are getting a perfect property audit, like I'm going to brag on Commissioner Hamm over at Corrections. I present him a perfect property audit, tens of millions of dollars of inventory, not missing a single item. That's the kind of accountability that Alabamians deserve, and I thought that was worthy of a perfect audit certificate. Then you have other state agencies, much smaller, and I'm not going to name them here because I'm not trying to embarrass, but much smaller agencies with much less property, and they lose stuff all the time. And every time we audit them, they're missing items. Those are the ones maybe my office needs to take a peek at their internal policies and procedures and compare it to what Corrections is doing to not lose a single item and figure out how can we help them improve. So might there be some pushback from the bureaucracy? Yeah, that's always possible. I remember when Jim Ziegler was trying to implement the new RFID system where you tag each property item with an RFID tag where you can scan it when you walk in the building. You don't have to, you know, crawl under the desk to scan the label anymore. You scan it with an RFID tag. Some of the agencies were giving him pushback on implementing that. And in fact, I even had some of that roll over into my term. I had to send a letter to one of the state agencies saying, we have an attorney general's opinion that says you have to do this. Like the state auditor, it determines the method and the manner in which the property audits are done, and you have to comply. And once we got that AG opinion, and finally the rest of the state agencies that have been hassling us went ahead and signed on to the program. So I think we have 100% compliance there now on that RFID program. So occasionally you do get a little pushback, but the thing is, most of these property managers want to do a good job. They work very well with our office. If we suggest something to them that's going to be helpful, they're very receptive. We put on trainings for them. I speak at their conferences, just spoke at one in Wetumpka a couple weeks ago. By and large, these people are doing a great job for the state of Alabama managing their property.
Now, I don't know if how you feel about this, but I am curious. And what are the, you mentioned Corrections as being one of the agencies that does well on its audits. What are the ones that do well? What are the ones that don't do so great?
Well, I don't want to name the I don't want to publicly embarrass the ones that did not do great, because I think that there were some issues there during COVID that led to some of the property losses. But I will say that there was one particular agency that was missing $2 million of state inventory, which is an incredibly large number. It's probably more inventory loss in that one agency than everyone else lost in the prior 2 years, just to put it in perspective. But there were some extenuating circumstances. I met with that department head. I mean, there were like 15 or 20 of us in the room. They took it very seriously. And their property manager has been thoroughly trained now by my staff. And we have located 1.3 million of the 2 million missing property as a result of our efforts. So I feel like we're on the right track there with that agency. That agency is one that in the past had a perfect property audit. So part of the problem there was their property manager either retired or passed away. I don't remember which. New property manager came in, probably not adequately trained, didn't have the right policies and procedures down, and they lost track of $2 million of property. So other agencies that do it right, though, I can tell you everybody in the Capitol building is doing it perfectly. I presented perfect audit certificates to the state treasurer, secretary of state, the governor, lots of the small boards and agencies. You know, maybe they've only got 200 or 300 property items. It's not uncommon at all for those to get perfect property audits. But the ones that impress me are the large ones like corrections, where I think they have $69 million of state property, for instance, and don't lose track of a single item. Now, if anybody's curious which state agencies are doing a good job and which ones are losing a lot of stuff, you can go to our website. I mean, we post all of the quarterly loss reports and an annual loss report on the state auditor's website, and you can go through. It's all public record. You can go through and dig through and see who's doing a good job and who's not. But just for the sake of not embarrassing that particular agency, I'm not going to name them today, but I will say that they have worked with us very well since that meeting that I had with them a year ago.
Well, last question. This is totally unrelated, and look at Chatty here on this. As a government, as a state government employee, and all this talk about changing Alabama's ethics laws, what do you think of that? I mean, you managed to kind of juggle a business and handle this, and how do you navigate the current framework? Does something need to be done there?
I see both sides of this argument. Let me say up front, I've not read the bill that you're referencing, so I can't necessarily comment with great sense of authority because I haven't read the bill yet. But in general, ethics rules are confusing. I'm not sure there's anybody in Alabama that understands all of them, and I could see how somebody could unintentionally slip up and violate some of the ethics rules. I do have concerns. We don't want this to be the Wild West in Montgomery. I mean, a lot of these ethics rules were put here for a reason in 2010, and they've caught a lot of people who honestly needed to be caught. And, you know, I'm speaking of people like Mike Hubbard, you know, that were really doing unethical things. So, you know, the $25 gift limit to legislators has always seemed a little bit low. Like if a lobbyist is going to buy you dinner, for instance, $25 is not hard to go over $25 at a restaurant. You've always got to be careful. And does that include tip or not? And so, I mean, I would support some common sense things like raising that threshold a little bit. But yeah, we want to make sure that public servants are here for the right reason, that they're not being, you know, bribed for their vote. But perhaps they, under either version, the version we're under now or the new version, that would still be the case. I mean, if you're selling your vote, either way, that's illegal. So I don't know any legislator that's going to sell their vote for a $25 meal. I've never encountered that. So I don't mean to straddle the fence on the issue here, but without reading the bill, that's my off-the-cuff remarks. I think there's some reforms that are needed, but anytime you start talking about ethics reform, I'm always nervous. I would want to review those details very carefully because we don't want to loosen our standards for holding elected officials and public employees accountable. I do think that we could benefit from having possibly separate rules for the elected officials from the rest of the public. The public is probably held at a very, very high standard. They didn't run for office. They're not serving in state government. You know, I don't know that a $25 gift limit applying to a public school teacher, for instance, is appropriate. You know, if you want to show some appreciation for a teacher who did a good job with your special needs child or something. So I think we might need to separate the two different classes of public employee versus elected official.
Andrew, we always appreciate your time. Let's talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, guys, we got to get a break here. Be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.